This is Audible.
From Simon & Schuster Audio.
Hello, I'm Sean Covey. Welcome to the Four Disciplines of Execution. Two of the principal things a leader can influence when it comes to producing results are your strategy or plan, and your ability to execute that strategy. Stop for a moment and ask yourself this question. Which of these do leaders struggle with more? Is it creating a strategy, or is it executing the strategy? Every time we pose this question to leaders anywhere in the world, their answer is immediate: execution. Now, ask yourself a second question. If you have an MBA or have taken business classes, what did you study more? Strategy or execution? When we ask leaders this question, the response once again is immediate: strategy. It's perhaps not surprising that the area with which leaders struggle most is also the one in which they have the least education. After working with thousands of leaders and teams in every kind of industry and in schools and government agencies worldwide, this is what we have learned. Once you've decided what to do, your biggest challenge is in getting people to execute it at the level of excellence you need. Why is execution so difficult? After all, if the strategy is clear and you as the leader are driving it, won't the team naturally engage to achieve it? The answer is no, and it's likely that your own experience has proven this more than once. This program represents the most actionable and impactful insights from all that we've learned. In it, you will discover a set of disciplines that have been embraced by thousands of leaders and hundreds of thousands of frontline workers, enabling them to produce extraordinary results. Let me read you a letter we received from Alex Azar, president of Eli Lilly and Company. He writes, "When I saw a 3-hour meeting on my calendar that day, I was skeptical. As a new VP of Eli Lilly and Company's U.S. affiliate, I was swamped. But since one of my leaders was running the meeting, I decided to attend. It was a decision I will always be glad I made, because within the first few minutes of the meeting, I realized I was seeing something special. I watched a team reporting on the remarkable results they had achieved by piloting a new set of practices known as the Four Disciplines of Execution. These were individuals who had not only achieved their goals, but who walked and talked like winners. Their chests were out and their heads were held high. As a leader, I wanted those results, but more importantly, I wanted that mindset throughout my entire organization. We launched the Four Disciplines throughout our managed healthcare business, aiming at two critical goals: to dramatically increase customer access to our medicines while simultaneously improving bottom-line profitability. During the same period, there was a larger initiative throughout Lilly to reorganize for more effective operations. We could not have chosen a more difficult context for creating engagement. In the end, we exceeded both of our goals by a significant margin, but these results were not really our greatest outcome. Our greatest outcome was strengthening our culture by raising the engagement of our teams. During a time of high demand, coupled with a reorganization that brought significant change, our employee engagement scores actually went up. I often look back on the decision to attend that initial meeting, and more importantly, on the journey we've made to create not only great business results, but also a high-performing culture. It was a pivotal decision for me, one that changed the way I lead forever. Now, let me offer you a couple more examples that underscore the real problem of execution. B.J. Walker was facing the greatest challenge of her career. As the newly appointed commissioner of the Department of Human Services for the U.S. state of Georgia in 2004, she could see that her 20,000 employees were completely demoralized. The department had burned through 6 commissioners in 5 years, was under constant media scrutiny due to the number of deaths and accidents involving children in the state's care. For months, her employees had operated under constant fear of making a mistake, which only made their poor productivity worse and led to some of the largest backlogs in the country. B.J. Walker needed a way to bring focus and direction to her team, and she knew that the clock was ticking. Less than 18 months later, B.J. and her team had reduced repeat cases of child maltreatment by a stunning 60%. Here's one more example. One of the hotels near Marriott International's headquarters, the Bethesda Marriott, wanted to improve performance measures, an effort magnified by being so close to the company's leadership. General Manager Brian Hilger His team and the hotel's owners worked together on a $20 million renovation that included remodeled rooms, an impressive lobby, and a new restaurant. Improvements critical to the higher guest scores. And the results were amazing. The hotel looked fantastic, but the guest scores were still not at desired levels. Yet. The second part of the equation would involve how associates interacted with guests and executed at the hotel, a strategy dependent on new behaviors. After 1 year, Brian and his team proudly celebrated earning the highest guest satisfaction scores in the 30-year history of the hotel. As Brian said, "I used to dread the arrival of our new guest satisfaction scores every Friday. Now, I'm excited to get up on Friday mornings." These stories from Eli Lilly, the state of Georgia, and Marriott sound very different from each other, but they aren't. For each of these leaders, the challenge was essentially the same. So was the solution. Their common challenge? Executing a strategy that required a significant change in human behavior. The behavior of many or even all of the people in the team or organization. Their common solution? Deeply implanting the four disciplines of execution, 4DX, a proven principle-based system that enables leaders to successfully meet this challenge. All leaders struggle with this challenge, even if they don't realize it. If you're leading people right now, you're probably trying to get them to do something different. Whether you lead a small work team or a whole company, a family or a factory, no significant result is achievable unless people change their behavior. Yet to be successful, you will need more than just their compliance. You will need their commitment. As every leader knows, getting the commitment of hearts and minds, the kind of commitment that will endure in the midst of the daily grind, is not easy. We've completed more than 1,500 implementations of the four disciplines before we were ready to write this book. Why? Because we wanted to test and refine the four disciplines against hundreds of real-world challenges like the ones faced by Alex Azar, BJ Walker, and Brian Hilger. When you execute a strategy that requires a lasting change in the behavior of other people, you are facing one of the greatest leadership challenges you will ever meet. With the four disciplines of execution, you are not experimenting with an interesting theory. Rather, you are implementing a set of proven practices that meet the challenge successfully every time. Whether you call it a strategy, a goal, or simply an improvement effort, any initiative you as a leader drive in order to significantly move your team or organization forward will fall into one of two categories. The first requires mainly a stroke of the pen. The second requires behavioral change. Stroke of the pen strategies are those that you execute just by ordering or authorizing them to be done. Simply put, if you have the money and the authority, you can make them happen. It might be a major capital investment, a change in the compensation system, a realignment of roles and responsibilities inside the organization, adding staff, or a new advertising campaign of some kind. While executing these strategies may require planning, consensus, guts, brains, and money, you know that in the end, it is going to happen. Behavioral change strategies are very different from stroke of the pen strategies. You can't just order them to happen because executing them requires getting people, often a lot of people, to do something different. And if you've ever tried to get other people to change their ways, you know how tough it is. Changing yourself is hard enough. For example, you may have to get all of your store employees to greet every customer that enters the store within 30 seconds, or get your entire sales force to begin using the new CRM system, or get your product development team to collaborate with the marketing team. If you're like Alex Azar or BJ Walker, you may be changing routines that have been entrenched for decades. This stuff is hard. In a key study in organizational change, the global management consulting firm Bain & Company reports these findings. Here's what they said. About 65% of initiatives required significant behavioral change on the part of frontline employees, something that managers often fail to consider or plan for in advance. Despite the significance of this problem, leaders seldom recognize it. You don't hear leaders saying, "I wish I were better at driving strategies that require people to do things differently." What you more likely are to hear is something like this: "I wish I didn't have Tom, Paul, or Sue to deal with." It's natural for a leader to assume the people are the problem. After all, they are the ones not doing what we need to have done. But you would be wrong. The people are not the problem. W. Edwards Deming, the father of the quality movement, taught that any time the majority of the people behave a particular way, the majority of the time, the people are not the problem. The problem is inherent in the system. As a leader, you own responsibility for the system. Although a particular person can be a big problem, if you find yourself blaming the people, you should look again. When we began to study this challenge several years ago, we first wanted to understand the root causes of weak execution. We commissioned an international survey of working people and examined hundreds of businesses and government agencies. During the early stages of our research, we found problems everywhere we looked. Our prime suspect behind execution breakdown was clarity of the objective. People simply didn't understand the goal they were supposed to execute. In fact, in our initial surveys, we learned that only one employee in seven could name even one of their organization's most important goals. That's right, only 15% could name even one of the top three goals their leaders had identified. The other 85% named what they thought was the goal, but it often didn't remotely resemble what their leaders had said. The further from the top of the organization, the lower the clarity. And that was just the beginning of the problems we uncovered. Lack of commitment to the goal was another problem. Even those people who knew the goal lacked commitment to achieving it. Only 51% could say that they were passionate about the team's goal, leaving almost half the team simply going through the motions. Accountability was also an issue. A staggering 81% of the people surveyed said they were not held accountable for regular progress on the organization's goals, and the goals were not translated into specific actions. 87% had no clear idea what they should be doing to achieve the goal. No wonder execution is so inconsistent. In short, people weren't sure what the goal was, weren't committed to it, didn't know what to do about it specifically, and weren't being held accountable for it. These were only the most obvious explanations as to why execution breaks down. On a more subtle level, there were problems with lack of trust, misaligned compensation systems, poor development processes, and poor decision making. Our first instinct was to say, fix everything, fix it all, and then you'll be able to execute your strategy. It was like advising them to boil the ocean. As we dug in further, we began to put our finger on a far more fundamental cause of execution breakdown. Certainly, all of the problems we just cited, the lack of clarity, commitment, collaboration, and accountability, exacerbate the difficulty of strategy execution. But in reality, they initially distracted us from seeing the deeper problem. You may have heard the expression, fish discover water last. That expression sums up our discovery very well. Like a fish discovering the water it's been swimming in the whole time, we finally realized that the fundamental problem with execution had always been right in front of us. We hadn't seen it because it was everywhere, hiding in plain sight. The real enemy of execution is your day job. We call it the whirlwind. It's the massive amount of energy that's necessary just to keep your operation going on a day-to-day basis. And ironically, it's also the thing that makes it so hard to execute anything new. The whirlwind robs you from the focus required to move your team forward. Leaders seldom differentiate between the whirlwind and strategic goals because both are necessary to the survival of the organization. However, they are clearly different. And more important, they compete relentlessly for time, resources, energy, and attention. We don't have to tell you which will usually win this fight. The whirlwind is urgent and it acts on you and everyone working for you every minute of every day. The goals that you've set for moving forward are important, but when urgency and importance clash, urgency will win every time. Once you become aware of the struggle, you will see it playing out everywhere in any team that is trying to execute anything new. Consider your own experience. Can you remember an important initiative that launched well and then died? How did the end come? Was it with a loud crash and a tremendous explosion? Or did it go down quietly over time, suffocated by the whirlwind? We've asked thousands of leaders this question, and we always get the same answer: slow suffocation. Executing in spite of the whirlwind means overcoming not only its powerful distraction, but also the inertia of the way it's always been done. We're not saying that the whirlwind is bad. It's not. It keeps your organization alive, and you can't ignore it. If you ignore the urgent, it can kill you today. It's also true, however, that if you ignore the important, it can kill you tomorrow. In other words, if you and your team operate solely from within the whirlwind, you won't progress. All your energy is spent just trying to stay upright in the wind. The challenge is executing your most important goals in the midst of the urgent. Different leaders experience the whirlwind in different ways. A senior executive with one of the world's largest home improvement retailers describes it this way. We don't have dragons swooping down and knocking us off our priorities. What we have are gnats. Every day we have gnats getting in our eyes, and when we look back over the last 6 months, we haven't accomplished any of the things we said we were going to do. You've almost certainly found yourself facing the whirlwind when you were trying to explain a new goal or strategy to someone who works for you. Can you remember the conversation? Your mind is centered clearly on the goal and you're explaining it in easy-to-understand terms. But while you're talking, the person you are talking to is backing slowly out of the room, all the while nodding and reassuring you, but trying to get back to what they would call the real work, another name for the whirlwind. Is that employee fully engaged in achieving that goal? Not a chance. Is he trying to sabotage your goal or undercut your authority? No. He's just trying to survive in his whirlwind. So let's be clear. The four disciplines of execution aren't designed for managing your whirlwind. Instead, they are rules for executing your most critical strategy in the midst of your whirlwind. Tim Harford, author of The Undercover Economist, said this, "You show me a successful complex system, and I will show you a system that has evolved through trial and error." In the case of the four disciplines of execution, he is absolutely right. It benefited from well-researched ideas, but it evolved through trial and error. In our initial research with Harris Interactive, we surveyed nearly 13,000 people internationally across 17 different industry groups and completed internal assessments with 500 different companies. Over the years, we've added to this foundation by surveying almost 300,000 leaders and team members. This research has been valuable as a foundation for the principles and in guiding our early conclusions. But the real insights did not come from research. They came from working with people like you in over 1,500 implementations. This effort is what enabled us to develop principles and methods that we know will work regardless of the industry or the nation in which they are implemented. There's good news and there's bad news here. The good news is that there are rules. Rules for executing in the face of the whirlwind. The bad news? The bad news is that there are rules. The kinds of rules that have immediate consequences if you violate them. Although the disciplines may seem simple at first glance, they are not simplistic. They will profoundly change the way you approach your goals. Once you adopt them, you will never lead in the same way again. Whether you are a project coordinator, lead a small sales team, or run a Fortune 500 company, we believe they represent a major breakthrough in how to move teams and organizations forward. Here's a quick overview of the four disciplines. Discipline 1, focus on the wildly important. Basically, the more you try to do, the less you actually accomplish. This is a stark, inescapable principle that we all live with. Somewhere along the way, most leaders forget this. Why? Because smart, ambitious leaders don't want to do less. They want to do more, even when they know better. Isn't it really difficult for you to say no to a good idea, much less a great one? And yet, there will always be more good ideas than you and your teams have the capacity to execute. That's why your first challenge is focusing on the wildly important. Discipline 1, focus on the wildly important, requires you to go against your basic wiring as a leader and focus on less so that your team can achieve more. When you implement Discipline 1, you start by selecting one, or at the most two, extremely important goals instead of trying to significantly improve everything all at once. We call this a wildly important goal, or a WIG, to make it clear to the team that this is the goal that matters most. Failure to achieve it will make every other accomplishment seem secondary, or possibly even inconsequential. If you're currently trying to execute 5, 10, or even 20 important goals, the truth is that your team can't focus. This lack of focus magnifies the intensity of the whirlwind, dilutes your efforts, and makes success almost impossible. This is especially problematic when there are too many goals at the highest levels of the organization, all of which eventually cascade into dozens and ultimately hundreds of goals as they work their way down throughout the organization, creating a web of complexity. However, when you narrow the focus of your team to one or two wildly important goals, the team can easily distinguish between what is truly top priority and what is the whirlwind. They move from a loosely defined and difficult to communicate collection of objectives to a small, focused set of achievable targets. Discipline 1 is the discipline of focus. Without it, you will never get the results you want. It's also only the beginning. Discipline 2, act on the lead measures. This is the discipline of leverage. It's based on the simple principle that all actions are not created equal. Some actions have more impact than others when reaching for a goal. And it is those that you want to identify and act on if you want to reach your goal. Whatever strategy you're pursuing, your progress and your success will be based on two kinds of measures, lag and lead. Lag measures are the tracking measurements of the wildly important goal, and they are usually the ones you spend most of your time praying over. Things like revenue, profit, market share, and customer satisfaction, they're all lag measures, meaning that when you receive them, the performance that drove them is already in the past. That's why you're praying. By the time you get a lag measure, you can't fix it. It's history. Lead measures are quite different in that they are the measures of the most high-impact things your team must do to reach the goal. In essence, they measure the new behaviors that will drive success in the lag measures. Whether those behaviors are as simple as offering a sample to every customer in the bakery or as complex as adhering to standards in jet engine design. A good lead measure has two basic characteristics. It's predictive of achieving the goal, and it can be influenced by the team members. To understand these two characteristics, consider the simple goal of losing weight. While the lag measure is pounds lost, two lead measures might be a specific limit on calories per day and a specific number of hours of exercise per week. These lead measures are predictive because by performing to them, you can predict what the scale, the lag measure, will tell you next week. They are influenceable because both of these new behaviors are within your control. Acting on the lead measures is one of the little-known secrets of execution. Most leaders, even some of the most experienced, are so focused on lag measures that the discipline to focus on the lead measures feels counterintuitive. Don't misunderstand. Lag measures are ultimately the most important things you are trying to accomplish. But lead measures, true to their name, are what will get you to the lag measures. Once you've identified your lead measures, they become the key leverage points for achieving your goal. Discipline 3. Keep a compelling scoreboard. People play differently when they're keeping score. If you doubt this, watch any group of teenagers playing basketball and see how the game changes the minute scorekeeping begins. However, the truth of this statement is more clearly revealed by a change in emphasis. People play differently when they are keeping score. It's not about you keeping the score for them. Discipline 3 is a discipline of engagement. In principle, the highest level of performance always comes from people who are emotionally engaged, and the highest level of engagement comes from knowing the score. That is, if people know whether they are winning or losing. It's that simple. The kind of scoreboard that will drive the highest levels of engagement with your team will be one that is designed solely for, and often by, the players. This player scoreboard is quite different from the complex coach's scoreboard that leaders love to create. It must be simple, so simple that members of the team can determine instantly if they are winning or losing. Why does this matter? If the scoreboard isn't clear, the game you want people to play will be abandoned in the whirlwind of other activities. And if your team doesn't know whether or not they are winning the game, they are probably on their way to losing. Discipline 4. Create a cadence of accountability. Discipline 4 is where execution really happens. The first three disciplines set up the game, but until you apply Discipline 4, your team isn't in the game. It is based on the principle of accountability, that unless we consistently hold each other accountable, the goal naturally disintegrates in the whirlwind. The cadence of accountability is a rhythm of regular and frequent meetings of any team that owns a wildly important goal. These meetings happen at least weekly, and ideally last no more than 20 to 30 minutes. In that brief time, team members hold each other accountable for producing results, despite the whirlwind. Why is the cadence of accountability so important? Consider the experience of someone with whom we've worked. He and his teenage daughter made an agreement that she would be allowed the use of the family car if she washed it every Saturday morning. He would meet with her each Saturday to make sure the car was clean. They met on Saturday for several weeks and everything went well, but then he had to go out of town for 2 Saturdays in a row. When he returned, he found the car had not been cleaned. He asked his daughter why she hadn't taken care of the job. She replied, "Are we still doing that?" It only took 2 weeks for the accountability system to break down. If this was the case in a one-on-one situation, Think how much more it applies to a work team or a whole organization. The magic is in the cadence. Team members must be able to hold each other accountable regularly and rhythmically. Each week, one by one, team members answer a simple question. What are the one or two most important things I can do in the next week, outside the whirlwind, that will have the biggest impact on the scoreboard? Then members report on whether they met the previous week's commitments, how well they are moving the lead and lag measures in the scoreboard, and their commitments for the coming week. All in only a few minutes. The secret to Discipline 4, in addition to the repeated cadence, is that team members create their own commitments. It's common to find teams where the members expect, even want, simply to be told what to do. However, because they make their own commitments, their ownership of them increases. Team members will always be more committed to their own ideas than they will to orders from above. Even more importantly, making commitments to their team members rather than solely to the boss shifts the emphasis from professional to personal. Simply put, the commitments go beyond their job performance to become promises to the team. Because the team commits to a new set of objectives each week, this discipline creates a just-in-time weekly execution plan that adapts to challenges and opportunities that can never be foreseen in an annual strategic plan. In this way, the plan is adapting as fast as the business is changing. The result? The team can direct enormous energy to the wildly important goal without getting blocked by the shifting whirlwind of change all around them. When your team begins to see the lag measure of a big goal moving as a direct result of their efforts, they will know they are winning. And we have found nothing that drives the morale and engagement of a team more than winning. People want to win. They want to make a contribution that matters. However, too many organizations lack this kind of discipline, the conscious, consistent regimen needed to execute key goals with excellence. The financial impact of a failure to execute can be huge, but it is only one of the impacts. Another is the human cost to people who want to give their best and be part of a winning team. By contrast, nothing is more motivating than belonging to a team who know the goal and are determined to get there. The four disciplines work because they are based on principles, not practices. Practices are situational, subjective, and always evolving. Principles, on the other hand, are timeless and self-evident, and they apply everywhere. They are natural laws, like gravity. Whether you understand them or even agree with them doesn't really matter. They still apply. We believe the principles of execution have always been focus, leverage, engagement, and accountability. Are there other principles at play when it comes to execution? Yes. But is there something special about these four and their sequencing? Absolutely. We didn't invent them, and we freely acknowledge that understanding them has never been the problem. The challenge for leaders has been finding a way to implement them, especially when the whirlwind is raging. For this audio adaptation of our book, we've organized the four disciplines of execution into two parts to provide you with a progressively deeper understanding of the disciplines and their application to any team. Section 1, the four disciplines of execution, presents a thorough understanding of the four disciplines. This section also explains why these apparently simple concepts are actually so difficult to practice, and why they are the key to successfully meeting any leader's greatest challenge. Section 2, installing 4DX with your team, is designed like a field guide. It gives very detailed step-by-step instructions for implementing the disciplines within your team. Now, this book is a little different from most other business books you've read. Most business books share a lot of very helpful ideas and theories, but are shallow on application. In this book, we are heavy in application, and we will tell you exactly what you can do to implement these disciplines, the specifics, the tips, the watch-outs, the must-dos. We'll share everything we know. Now, to begin the process, I will turn this audio over to my co-authors and esteemed colleagues, Chris McChesney and Jim Huling.
Before you begin, we've learned that there are three things to watch out for when you begin studying the four disciplines more deeply. First, 4DX says easy, does hard. The disciplines will sound deceptively simple, but they take sustained work to implement. As one of our clients put it, says easy, does hard. Don't be misled by the simplicity. The four disciplines are powerful in part because they are easy to understand, but successful implementation takes significant effort over an extended period. It requires sustained commitment. If the goal you're seeking isn't one you just have to achieve, you might not make the sustained commitment necessary. The payoff, however, is that you'll not only achieve this goal, but also build the organizational muscle and capability to achieve the next goal and the next. Second, 4DX is counterintuitive. Each of the four disciplines are paradigm shifting and might even fly in the face of your intuition. While it might seem instinctive for you to have lots of goals, the more you have, the fewer you will achieve with excellence. If you want to achieve a certain goal, you don't focus on the goal itself, but on the lead measures that drive the goal. As you implement each discipline, at least initially, you'll be doing things at first glance that might not seem to make sense and that run counterintuitive to your instincts. Let us emphasize, though, that the four disciplines are the result of serious, intense experimentation and hypothesis testing over many years. Everything you learn here has been thoroughly vetted. The good news is that once you gain some experience with the four disciplines, what seemed awkward in the beginning will become more comfortable and more effective. And third, 4DX is an operating system. The four disciplines are a matched set, not a menu of choices. While every one of the disciplines has value, their real power is in how they work together and in sequence. Each discipline sets the stage for the next discipline. Leave one out, and you'll have far less effective results. Think of the four disciplines as the operating system of a computer. Once it's installed, you can use it to run almost any strategy you choose. But you need the whole system for it to work. As we move through the next chapters, the reasons for this will become clear. Discipline 1, focus on the wildly important. The first discipline is to focus your finest effort on the one or two goals that will make all the difference, instead of giving mediocre effort to dozens of goals. Execution starts with focus. Without it, the other three disciplines won't be any help to you at all. Why do almost all leaders struggle to narrow their focus? It's not because they don't think focus is needed. Every week, we work with dozens of leadership teams across the world, and almost without exception, they acknowledge that they need greater focus. Despite this desire, they continue to find themselves with too many competing priorities, pulling their teams in too many different directions. One of the first things we want you to know is that you are not alone. The inability of leaders to focus is a problem of epidemic proportions. We also want you to know that when we talk about narrowing your focus in Discipline 1, we are not talking about narrowing the size and complexity of your whirlwind. Although over time, attention to WIGS might affect that. Your whirlwind includes all of the urgent activities that are necessary to sustain your business day to day. Focusing on the wildly important means narrowing the number of goals you are attempting to accomplish beyond the day-to-day demands of the whirlwind. Simply put, Discipline 1 is about applying more energy against fewer goals. Because when it comes to setting goals, the law of diminishing returns is as real as the law of gravity. If a team focuses on two or even three goals beyond the demands of their whirlwind, they can often accomplish them. However, if they set 4 to 10 goals, our experience has been that they will achieve only one or two. They'll be going backwards. If they go after 11 to 20 in addition to their whirlwind, they lose all focus. Confronted with so many goals, the team members will stop listening, let alone executing. Why is this so? The fundamental principle at work in Discipline 1 is that human beings are genetically hardwired to do one thing at a time with excellence. You're probably thinking proudly that you're a great multitasker and can get a lot of things done at the same time. But to the wildly important goal, you want to devote your best efforts. Steve Jobs of Apple had a big company to run and could have proudly brought many more products to market than he did, but he chose to focus on a handful of wildly important products. His focus was legendary, and so were his results. Science tells us the human brain can give full focus to only one object at any given moment. You can't even give your best effort to driving a car while talking on a mobile phone and eating a burger, let alone juggle multiple important business goals at once. MIT neuroscientist Earl Miller says trying to concentrate on two tasks causes an overload of the brain's processing capacity, particularly when people try to perform similar tasks at the same time, such as writing an email and talking on the phone. They compete to use the same part of the brain. Trying to carry too much, the brain simply slows down. If this is true of a simple task like processing emails and phone calls, think of the impact of losing focus on the goals that could transform your business. The prefrontal cortex, the brain's gateway, just can't handle the daily flood that comes at us because it's designed to deal with teaspoons rather than tidal waves of information. In our culture of multitasking, according to Professor Clifford Nass of Stanford University, quote, "The neural circuits devoted to scanning, skimming, and multitasking are expanding and strengthening, while those used for reading and thinking deeply with sustained concentration are weakening or eroding." Close quote. What's the consequence? Quote, "Habitual multitaskers may be sacrificing performance on primary tasks. They are suckers for irrelevancy." Close quote. According to Jordan Grafman, quote, "improving our ability to multitask actually hampers our ability to think deeply and creatively. The more you multitask, the less deliberative you become, the less you're able to think and reason out a problem." Close quote. Of course, you don't have to overload the brain. You can leverage the brain's capacity to concentrate superbly on one wildly important goal at a time, while still being aware of the other priorities. There's no better illustration of this principle than in an airport control tower. Right now, more than 100 airplanes might be approaching, taking off, or taxiing around, and all of them are very important, especially if you happen to be on one of them. But for the air traffic controller, only one airplane is wildly important right now, the one that's landing at this moment. The controller is aware of all the other planes on the radar. She's keeping track of them, but right now, all her talent and expertise is solely focused on one flight. If she doesn't get that flight on the ground safely and with total excellence, then nothing else she might achieve is really going to matter much. She lands one airplane at a time. WIGs are like that. They are the goals you must achieve with total excellence beyond the circling priorities of your day-to-day. To succeed, you must be willing to make the hard choices that separate what is wildly important from all the many other merely important goals on your radar. Then you must approach that WIG with focus and diligence until it is delivered, as promised, with excellence. That doesn't mean that you abandon all of your other important goals. They're still on your radar, but they don't require your finest diligence and effort right now. Still, some of those goals might never be worthy of your finest diligence and effort. Some of them never should have taken off in the first place. People who try to push many goals all at once usually wind up doing a mediocre job on all of them. You can ignore the principle of focus, but it won't ignore you. Or you can leverage this principle to achieve your top goal one at a time, again and again. The leader's challenge. So here's the big question. Why is there so much pressure towards expanding rather than narrowing the goals? If you understand the need to focus, why is it so difficult to actually do it? You might say that as a leader, it's because you can always see more than a dozen existing things that need to improve and another dozen new opportunities you'd like to be chasing on any given day. On top of that, there are other people and other people's agendas that can be adding to your goals, especially if they are from higher up in the organization. However, more often than any of these external forces, there's one real culprit that creates most of the problem. You. In the words of the old cartoon Pogo, we have met the enemy, and he is us. Although the tendencies that drive you to the higher side of the scale are well-intentioned, in a very real sense, you are often your own worst enemy. Being aware of these tendencies is a good place to start. Let's examine a few of them candidly. One reason you may drive your team to take on too much is that, as a leader, you tend to be ambitious and creative. You are exactly the kind of individual organizations like to promote. The problem is that creative, ambitious people always want to do more, not less. If this describes you, you're almost hardwired to violate the first discipline of execution. Another reason you might lead your team to go after too many goals is to hedge your bets. In other words, if your team pursues everything, then it seems likely that something might work. It ensures that if you fail, no one can question the level of effort your team gave. Even though you know that more is not better, it looks better, especially to a person above you. So, you may resist the increased accountability for results that would come with fewer goals and instead rely on the sheer volume of effort to drive your success. However, the greatest challenge you face in narrowing your goals is simply that it requires you to say no to a lot of good ideas. 4DX may even mean saying no to some great ideas, at least for now. Nothing is more counterintuitive for a leader than saying no to a good idea, and nothing is a bigger destroyer of focus than always saying yes. What makes it even harder is that these good ideas aren't presented all at once, wrapped in a nice little bundle so that choosing among them would be simple. Instead, they filter in one at a time. Alone, each idea seems to make so much sense that it's almost impossible for you to say no, so you fall into a trap of your own making. We believe all leaders facing this challenge should have this quote prominently displayed in their office. There will always be more good ideas than there is capacity to execute. We can't overemphasize the importance of focusing on only one or two wigs at once. It's counterintuitive, but it must happen. Before Apple was named Company of the Decade in the United States by multiple sources, then COO Tim Cook, now CEO, said to the company's shareholders, quote, "We are the most focused company that I know of or have read of or have any knowledge of. We say no to good ideas every day. We say no to great ideas. In order to keep the amount of things we focus on very small in number, so that we can put enormous energy behind the ones we do choose. The table each of you are sitting at today, you could probably put every product on it that Apple makes, yet Apple's revenue last year was $40 billion. Apple's determination to say no to good ideas has had devastating consequences for their competitors. We once worked with a manufacturer that competed directly with Apple's iPhone. When we met with the leader responsible for creating a new interface to compete with the iPhone, how would you like that assignment, by the way? He was more than a little discouraged. "It's really not fair," he said, shaking his head. "Between our domestic and international operations, we make over 40 different phones. They only make one." We couldn't have said it better ourselves. As Stephen R. Covey says, you have to decide what your highest priorities are and have the courage, pleasantly, smilingly, unapologetically, to say no to other things. And the way you do that is by having a bigger yes burning inside. Once you understand the importance of saying no to good ideas in order to keep your team's focus narrow, you can avoid the first of two focus traps. However, the second trap, trying to turn everything in the whirlwind into a wig, is even more common. Once caught in it, you try to turn everything in the whirlwind into a goal. Within the whirlwind are all of your existing measurements for running the organization today. It's perfectly appropriate for your team to spend 80% of their time and energy sustaining or incrementally improving the whirlwind. Keeping the ship afloat should be job one. But if they're spending 100% of their energy trying to significantly improve all of those dials at once, you will have lost your focus. Applying even pressure to all of the dials in the whirlwind is like trying to make holes in a piece of paper by applying even pressure with all of your fingers. You can't press on any one of the dials with enough force to drive a change in human behavior. Many of the dials require dozens of changes in human behavior in order to move them. Focusing on one wig is like punching one finger through the paper. All of your strength goes into making that hole. Unless you can achieve your goal with a stroke of the pen, success is going to require your team to change their behavior. And they simply cannot change that many behaviors at once, no matter how badly you want them to. Trying to significantly improve every measure in the whirlwind will consume all of your time and leave you with very little to show for it. So beyond avoiding these two traps, refusing to say no to all the good ideas and trying to make everything in the whirlwind into a goal, what should you do? Narrow your focus to one or two wildly important goals and consistently invest the team's time and energy into them. In other words, if you want high-focus, high-performance team members, they must have something wildly important to focus on. Identifying your wildly important goals. A wildly important goal, or WIG, is a goal that can make all the difference because it's your strategic tipping point. You're going to commit to apply a disproportionate amount of energy to it, the 20% that is not used up in the whirlwind. But how do you decide which of the many possible goals should be your WIG? Sometimes the choice of a WIG is obvious, but at other times it can be confusing. If you try to select your WIG by asking yourself, what's most important, you may find your mind running in circles. Why? Because the urgent priorities in your whirlwind are always competing to be the most important, and a very good argument can usually be made for choosing any of them. To illustrate this problem, imagine the leadership team in a manufacturing plant having this conversation. I'm telling you, quality is the most important thing, and it should be our WIG, says one person. Well, don't forget, it's our production that pays the bills around here, says another. I'm sorry, but I disagree with both of you, says a third. Safety has to be the most important. Have you ever had one of your people seriously hurt in an accident? If you have, you'd agree. The result is frustration and confusion, along with an inevitable and paradoxical loss of focus. The problem in this conversation is that the leaders are asking the wrong question. In determining your wildly important goal, don't ask, what's most important? Instead, begin by asking, if every other area in our operation remained at its current level of performance, what's the one area where change would have the greatest impact? This question changes the way you think and lets you clearly identify the focus that would make all the difference. Remember, 80% of your team's energy will still be directed at sustaining the whirlwind. So ignore the temptation to worry that by making one or two goals most important, your team will be ignoring everything else. And once you stop worrying about everything else going backwards, you can start moving forward on your WIG. In the words of Discipline 1, you can focus on the wildly important. Your wildly important goal will come from one of two categories, either from within the whirlwind or from outside it. Within the whirlwind, it could be something so badly broken that it must be fixed, or it could be a key element of your value proposition that isn't being delivered. Poor project completion time, out of control costs, unsatisfactory customer service are all good examples. However, it could also be an area in which your team is already performing well and where leveraging this strength could result in significant impact. For example, increasing patient satisfaction in a hospital from the 85th percentile to the 95th percentile could increase your revenues dramatically. Outside the whirlwind, the choices tend to be about repositioning yourself strategically. Launching a new product or service, either to counter a competitive threat or seize a huge opportunity, could be a WIG that would make all the difference. Remember that this type of WIG will require an even greater change in behavior, since it will be completely new to your team. Whether your WIG comes from within the whirlwind or outside it, your real aim is not only to achieve it, but also to then make the new level of performance a natural part of your team's operation. In essence, once a WIG is achieved, it goes back into the whirlwind. Every time this happens, the whirlwind changes. It isn't as chaotic. Chronic problems are resolved and new performance levels are sustained. In essence, it's a much higher performing whirlwind. Ultimately, this is what enables your team to pursue the next WIG from a stronger foundation. Sometimes choosing your WIG is about more than selecting the aspect of your business where the greatest results are desired. It's about a WIG so fundamental to the heart of your mission that achieving it defines your existence as an organization. We got to work with the new president of a large thrift store chain just as he was asking himself these questions. His predecessor had put the company on a firm financial and operational footing, updating marketing and advertising, the look and the feel of the stores, and the accounting procedures. When we got into the WIG discussion, some of his reports thought this emphasis needed to continue. Others wanted more emphasis on hiring more disabled workers. Still others argued that their top wig should be growth. The range of choices was baffling. To help the team find common ground, the new leader asked everyone to ponder the mission of the organization. Quote, to promote self-reliance among the disabled and displaced, close quote. With the company in a solid financial and operational position, could it be that the area where they now wanted the greatest results might be more directly related to their mission? Gradually, a wig emerged from this experience, one they had not even considered before. Quote, help disabled workers find jobs outside our organization that can sustain them. While they couldn't hire every disabled person in their region, they had the operational capacity to train thousands in the retail business and find better jobs for them so that they could escape from dependency. The organization's new measure of success? Increasing the number of disabled people placed in sustainable jobs. This wig transformed the organization. They helped thousands become self-reliant and find a new sense of self-worth, while sustaining the day-to-day financial and operational results that made their mission possible. Focusing the organization. Up to this point, we've talked a lot about narrowing the focus as it relates to you and your team. This is in itself a huge challenge. Narrowing the focus for an entire organization, or even a large portion of an organization, however, is a much bigger challenge. Although we'll cover this in more detail in Section 3, we want you to gain a high-level understanding of the rules for applying Discipline 1 organizationally before we move into Discipline 2. Rule number 1, no team focuses on more than two wigs at the same time. This rule acts like a governor on an engine. When you are deeply into the four disciplines of execution, there may be dozens or even hundreds of wigs across the entire organization. But the key is not to overload any single leader, team, or individual performer. Remember, they are all dealing with the incessant demands of the whirlwind. Keep this rule in mind as you consider the remaining three rules. If you violate this one, you'll have lost your focus as an organization. Rule number 2, the battles you choose must win the war. Whether it's a military conflict or the war on hunger, cancer, or poverty, there's a relationship between battles and wars. The only reason you fight a battle is to win the war. The sole purpose of wigs at lower levels in the organization is to help achieve the wigs at the higher levels. It isn't enough that the lower level wigs support or align with the higher level wigs. The lower level wigs must ensure the success of the higher wigs. For example, a provider of internet financial services we worked with knew they had to increase revenues from $160 million to $200 million by fiscal year end in order to fulfill the expectation of their investors. A new outside sales team committed to provide $8 million of new revenue, and the major account division committed the other $32 million. But what about the other major division, the technology team? What role did they play in this revenue wig? Did they have any role at all? At first, they felt left out of the wig. After some careful research, they determined that the most impactful lower-level wig that they could set for themselves would be to improve their record for continuous, uninterrupted service. This was a major criteria new customers would use to choose a provider, perhaps the most important criteria. As it turned out, this group had to fight the key battle in achieving the wig, which in turn cleared the path for the other divisions as well. Once the top-level wig is chosen, the next question is critical. Instead of asking, what are all the things we could do to win this war, a common mistake that results in a long to-do list, ask, what are the fewest battles necessary to win the war? The answer to that question determines which and how many lower-level wigs will be needed to achieve the top-level wig. As you begin to choose the battles to win the war, you have begun to both clarify and simplify your strategy. Rule number 3, senior leaders can veto, but not dictate. The highest levels of execution are never reached when the strategy is devised solely by the top leaders of the organization and simply handed down to the leaders and the teams below. Without involvement, you cannot create high levels of commitment that execution requires. While senior leaders will undoubtedly determine the top-level wigs, they must allow the leaders at each level below to define the wigs for their teams. This not only leverages the knowledge of those leaders, but also creates a greater sense of ownership and involvement. Simply put, they become more engaged in a goal that they chose themselves and that supports a worthy organizational goal. Senior leaders then exercise the right to veto if the battles chosen are not going to win the war. Implementing Discipline 1 enables an organization to quickly turn a broad strategy into clearly defined wigs at every level. It is not solely a top-down process, but neither is it exclusively bottom-up. Through this process, the senior leader's choice of the overall wig brings clarity top-down and allowing the leaders and teams below to choose their wigs bottom-up brings engagement. In the process, the entire organization mobilizes around the focus that matters most and takes ownership for driving results. Rule number 4, all wigs must have a finish line in the form of from X to Y by when. Every wig at every level must contain a clear, measurable result, as well as the date by which that result must be achieved. For instance, a revenue-focused wig might be increased percent of annual revenue from new products from 15% to 21% by December 31st. This from X